Hello, and welcome to What in Tarnation, a UNC hot take podcast. On this episode, we don't really have an agenda. We're just here to be mad. I'm Tanya Anderson, and with me, as always, are Brandon Anderson and Julius Emanuel. Guys, are we still in a state of disappointment, or have we moved on?
I'm numb for the most part, but I'm also ready for all of the roster turnover and acquisition stuff to be done.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think I'm still slightly disappointed a bit, only because the tournament is just starting, you know, kind of thing. And with us turning down the NIT invite and knowing that we could still be playing some basketball, but we're not. But yeah, definitely ready to get this roster shifting out of the way.
So I guess we should start there. Did you really want them to go to the NIT? Because I'm going to be honest, I didn't.
I think I did want them to go. I realized the risk. So I definitely understand, you know, they decided they didn't want to go. That's okay. I don't really fault them for it. But I would have appreciated seeing them try to relish something of the season kind of thing, even if it wasn't necessarily our starters, right? Even if it was, you know, because I would love to see more Leaky Black, because, you know, we're not going to see any more of him. Selfishly, I'd like to see more Pete Nance. I'd like to see some of the other players, you know, get a little bit, whatever more that they could get. But I definitely understand why they didn't.
Yeah, and I think you ended that statement exactly how I feel like that's important to say. It's understandable that they made the decision that they made. I am fine with people wanting them to have kept playing and that type of thing. I definitely have been of the opinion that the way things went down is how they should have went down. Like, this whole season has just been bad. I don't even
call it a slog.
Yeah. Like, it was clear by the end of the ACC tournament that nobody was in a good headspace. Not everybody was healthy. Bacot definitely wasn't healthy. Throwing him into the NIT was just a very bad idea in my head.
And he was one of the first to say, like, he didn't want to go.
Yeah.
And if Bacot doesn't want to go, I feel like that's telling.
True, but it didn't need to be Bacot out there starting, right? And so if he didn't feel like he could play, and he probably couldn't, like, he's played on an injured ankle now how many times through UNC? Like, yeah. Go out into the NIT where you clearly don't have any expectations, and roll out some of your other players to see, you know, what they could do. I don't know. Okay, I guarantee you Leaky would be playing still. Because, again, that would be his only chance to get more. And, you know, let's see what we had with the other players. And then the reasoning kind of is all over the place as far as I'm concerned. So yeah. I'm curious about all that, too.
The messaging has kind of been a mess since the decision was made public. It seems like there's a non-zero amount of hard feelings in there. Just listening to what Dontrezz Stiles had to say this week, that is clearly, to me, a player who is not happy with how it all went down. And, you know, they can say the team voted. It obviously was not a unanimous thing. There were some people who did want to play, and I feel really bad for those guys who wanted to go play and aren't getting to. And I think the USA Today story that came out was, it's mess. And it's an uncomfortable position for the UNC program to be so heavily involved in a spectacle. But when you have, like, multiple players' parents being quoted in an article about this decision. Like, I don't think it's a good look, even if some of it's like, yeah, I mean, I get it. If everything is fine and well, they decline comment and we aren't talking about this. But having three different parents quoted to varying degrees, Puff Johnson's dad did not seem happy.
I actually want to read his quotes just real fast so that we're all on the same page. So Puff Johnson's father, Gilbert, what he said was, I think it should have been coach's decision, not the kid's decision. They should have played in the NIT. Win or lose, they needed that experience. I don't like the way they ended it. To cap it off with them saying no to the NIT, why give them that decision? Apparently they struggled to make the right decision. Seen that all year. Why leave that in their hands?
So that was a bit contradictory anyway. Like, yeah. I got it. Because, you know, even we get the sense that if it was the coach's decision, like, they still wouldn't be playing. Like, whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And then, you know, I get it if you want to go. But there was a sentence in that USA Today article showing how even messy that was, that said the vote was unanimous. And I'm going, you literally have quoted parents saying
that my kid wanted to go.
So I'm like, what is going on here?
There is only one way that that is telling the truth, and I know it's not, but the only way that happens is if the players then turn around and lied to their parents and lied to the media saying, I actually wanted to play. I know that's not true. Like, Baycott alone just being like, I didn't want to play, that right there says that that's not true. It was a majority vote. That's what happened. Ultimately, Bubba Cunningham and Hubert Davis get the final say anyway. That's what happened. It's bad optics. It's bad messaging. It's bad that the parents are out here running their mouths. And I mean, I can't stress this enough, in like a year or two, this won't matter, but right now it looks really bad.
It won't matter. And I mean, Duke declined an NIT invitation 2 years ago.
Yeah. Due to COVID reasons, and I'm throwing up air quotes for the people listening.
And no one thinks about that or thinks anything about that. I think the problem here, and like if Carolina was just like, we're not going, I feel like that would have been one thing. But the fact that people have been coming out and being like, no, I wanted to play. No, I wanted to play. That's where it looks like there's trouble brewing, whether it is or not. And that's the kind of thing that I feel like makes it a bit of a different situation. Like, if it was a united front of like, we're done, we don't want to do this anymore, it's over, I think it would be one thing. But when you have people being like, well, actually, I would have liked to go to the NIT, it's a little different.
Well, so another thing that I should mention too is that I don't know that this won't matter. In the grand scheme of things, it won't. But I still feel like this is something that a lot of people will be talking about, because you have rival bases, Duke, NC State, fans, boosters, what have you, that are more in our business than we are in theirs. Mm-hmm. So I fully expect this to come up, whether it's on social media or to a player that's, you know, that's being recruited. I do expect this to come up in some form or fashion in the future.
Yeah, when they're recruiting the same player, they're going to be like, hey, you know, what happens if it doesn't go right and they just bow out again? Aren't you worried about that? Aren't you concerned that it doesn't seem like everybody's on the same page in Chapel Hill? You know where they are on the same page? Right here, buddy. And you don't need to give people talking points.
They already had that with the whole academic scandal. But I mean, yeah, I don't know.
But we seem to have gotten a little over that, right? So they still say it, but yeah, it doesn't ring quite as bad as it did. As a matter of fact, I've spent the past 2 days like watching podcasts about, you know, UNC UNC joining FSU and Clemson, you know, asking for more revenue. And what these, a lot of these pundits, they'll say is like, oh, there's a great academic school, you know, aside from the scandal that they had years ago, but that's been cleaned up kind of thing. So like, we're over that hump. And yet, you've got Duke and State and to a lesser degree, Kentucky fans still talking about our last NIT trip, despite what Carolina has done, you know, since then. So I just, this is more ammunition.
Well, and that's the other thing, right? Like, they're always going to find something. And I know that this carries maybe a more powerful bullet than, you went to the NIT. But it's just like, I don't know, maybe I'm getting old and just caring a bit less. I don't know. But I just like, there's no winning with them, whether it's on the recruiting trail, whether it's just fans talking, whether it's players talking. They always find something. It's never not something. I do think that the recruiting thing is a very good point. I think that's where it matters the most. Outside of that, I'm just like, how am I supposed to react to this? Like, you're mad about something that nobody but two people had full control over, or not mad really, just they're making fun of it. But like, you want to keep going on and on about that? It's like, okay, but y'all have stuff too. We can talk about that stuff, but it's just at some point, find new material. But as far as recruiting goes,
but we just gave them new material is basically what I'm saying. Like,
yeah. You know.
Yeah, and that's like the frustrating thing is like, it's one thing for Steve State fan to be on Twitter being like, haha, y'all didn't even go to the NIT. It's quite another for Kevin Keats to roll up to some recruit's house and be like, I don't know, man, kind of seems like things aren't great over there right now. Wouldn't want to get into that mess if it was me, but I mean, you do you, I guess. Like, you just don't need to give them that. And that's the frustrating thing. And for better or worse, Carolina is always going to be the biggest glass house. Like, everyone has their face pressed up against it in a way that doesn't always go the other direction. So, you know, yeah, State's got stuff, you know, whatever other schools do too. Kentucky certainly has a coaching situation on their hands, but for better or worse, Carolina is always going to draw a lot of that, like a disproportionate amount of that. And I think you have to be really careful about what you let out of the gates, so to speak. And the messaging around this has just been messy.
What's even worse is if this happened like 20 years ago, it wouldn't have gotten to this. I mean, people were speculating online, like on Twitter, and then there was articles coming out. And I think, yeah, the Dontrez Styles thing was a podcast. It's just college basketball, man, sports in general have very much become, you have to be on every P and Q that exists, or you are going to create a bigger mess than you would have ever imagined in your life.
So given that, I have a quick hot take for you. I don't think this would have happened under Roy.
I don't think it would have either.
No, he would have played. Like, I don't even think he would have, like, if this exact season happened, he would have made them play.
But this is kind of also just, like, another example of the commentary and the stories and the stuff that has come out this season that kind of makes you go, Like, I have pointed to the Justin Jackson interview where he was asked about how things had gone this season. And he was just like, oh, we would have never let that happen. It kind of is just, again, another like piece of a Sunday of like, what is going on and why is it the way that it is? Because, yeah, I don't think this would have happened under Roy. He would have said, you're going. I don't care. Most likely. And they would have gone and played, and that would have been that.
And I don't just mean the plan in the NIT. Like, I don't know that Roy wouldn't have also said, you know, that we're not playing. I just don't think you would have had former players, parents of player, current players speaking out doing this whole thing that's happened this season. Because I definitely remember when Justin Jackson did that thing, because I said that to Brandon, and I was like, you know how embarrassed former players have to be to do this?
Yeah.
Right. To even say, like, we would have been too afraid to let it get to that point because we would have known what was coming. Like, it all just speaks to, I think your point is 100% correct. Like, because we saw it, right? There was drama within the program during Roy's time, but it didn't get out like this. Already has. And this is early days.
I think there were whispers of it, but it never got to screaming, especially that last season, because there's the whole
rumors and, like,
yeah.
I heard from a guy. It wasn't parents going on USA Today saying stuff.
And current players doing podcasts on spring break airing out dirty laundry.
Right.
And I think ultimately what this leads to is a second year head coach maybe not having a complete chokehold on the team. And I know that it's hard to keep parents quiet. Really, they can do what they want. It's not like Hubert can do anything about it. But I feel like if you're doing all the right things and you're saying all the right things and you're making all of the right moves, it just doesn't get to this point. And I don't necessarily like I don't have bitter feelings about it, but it does show that he has a lot of growth to do as a coach, as somebody running a program. Like, these are things that you need to have under control too. And like, I the mind-boggling part is that he was with Roy for long enough and basically learning from him that you would think he would have a better grasp of some of this stuff, but for some reason that hasn't existed, and it's been really confusing.
Well, and to your point, talking about, you know, if you were doing a saying the right things, which, yeah, is literally the easiest thing that we can do. And by the way, I'm not mad either. I'm concerned. I'm, yeah, not mad.
Yes, exactly.
But saying the right things, like, there's been so much confliction. Like, dude, like, literally, when he was doing that last Top of the Hill radio show, right, the other day, he was talking about building depth and, you know, what have you, and literally as he started talking, breaking news, McCoy and Nickel are leaving.
Yeah. Like,
in that same breath, they were asking something. It was a more eloquently worded, but it was, man, why didn't you use the bench? And he's like, well, to get into the game, you got to play good in practice. And to stay in the game, you have to play good in the games. And I looked at Brandon and I was like, if I'm a bench player, I have just become the Joker. Because, like, that's clearly not true. Because we saw not playing well in games. And the minutes do not reflect that you got taken out of a game because you weren't playing well in a game.
And I'm going to say almost.
Are we going there already?
I know both of y'all have said it enough this season, so I'm going to say it for y'all. Caleb Love played probably the most minutes of anybody on the team.
He did. He absolutely did.
Yeah.
He played 90% of the team's minutes,
uh-huh,
from February 1st through the end of the year.
And I'm going to tell y'all something else. Not even the minutes piece. I think he took almost 100 more shots than the second person did.
Yeah.
So if
I'm
DeMarco Dunn, if I'm Dontrezz Styles, if I'm Tyler Nickel, I hear that and I'm literally like, what?
And that's the other thing. Like, I feel like he has to adjust his expectations a little bit. And not only that, but you have to recognize when, like, you have to recognize more effectively that somebody is not working during games. Because, for one, some of those players would have absolutely got more minutes under Roy. I hate doing the comparison to old coaches. I actually hate it with a passion. But all I'm saying is the Hall of Fame coach would have played those players more minutes. The other thing is Caleb would have played less. He wouldn't have played as many minutes because he would mess up and he would have been on the bench and Roy would have been in his face yelling.
It's hilarious because they all would have as a collective group, right? Roy wouldn't have specifically picked on Caleb Love, but I'd love to go back through and like pick out how many of the what I call the patented scoring droughts that we would go on, the 4 and 5 minute scoring droughts. No, you're all getting replaced.
Mm-hmm.
Like every one of them.
You would look over, there would be 5 people waiting at the scorer's table. The starters would come out, and Roy wouldn't even coach for the next 4 minutes because he would be tearing the starters a new one about everything that he had just witnessed them doing wrong, and then they would go back in.
And I'm not even saying you need to tear them a new one, because obviously we've established, or they've established, that that's not Huber. Cool. But still pull them.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, pull them. Something is not right. Not only are they not helping themselves, but they're not helping the preferred outcome here. Literally. I really, and it's probably something that I'm going to do over the summer, but I'm going to assume that we had at least 3 stretches of at least 4 minutes of scoring droughts for our games this season. Like, it's just, I wanted to trademark it for Carolina. I was seeing it so often, and I'm going, oh my gosh, please, let's do something else. Like, can we play a game of horse? Like, I don't know, but
something. You know, and what you said about he doesn't have to yell at him. I mean, there's effective coaches out there that don't do what Roy used to do, or what some of these other, like John Calipari is a great example. Like, there's players that don't, or there's coaches that don't need to coach like that. But the thing is if you don't coach like that, you need to figure out how to press buttons even still.
It goes back to my point that I don't think he did a very good job this year of reaching them.
Right.
And that can mean a lot of different things. It doesn't necessarily have to be you yelling at them, but I think one of the reasons why Hubert and Roy worked so well together was that, to me, Hubert seemed like a really good foil for Roy. Roy was going to probably insult you a couple different ways. And then Hubert was there to come behind him and be like, it's okay, man. You've got this. Get back out there. Everything's okay. And now your head coach is that guy. But you have to have another guy that's like, hey, man, what you're doing ain't it.
And we don't really know if they have that or not, honestly. I haven't really heard much about from the assistant coaches. Every now and then there will be some quote. Or, you know, it'll say somewhere in the article, it'll be like, you know, this guy's, you know, yelled in the...
If that does exist, they didn't do a great job.
Yeah.
So, well, and to further your point there, if that's, you know, if you want to be the hey man, like you're doing good, okay, pull them out of the game and actually tell them that. Like, how much of that did you see, like, in game? Like, hey, man, you know, I know you're in your head, like, whatever, you know, but you can do better, blah, blah, blah. If that's what you want to do, that's cool. But actually do it in the game when it's needed. Like, in practice, that's not when that's needed. I realized, you know, there towards the end, I noticed at least reports, you know, that Hubert was getting a little more fired up there, you know, in the locker room during halftime. But – okay, we're at the end of a very disappointing season at this point, Coach. Like, you know, you still have plenty of other opportunities to talk to your team than in the locker room at halftime.
And I will be fair for just a moment to break up some of the attacking of Hubert Davis. Like,
I'm really not trying to attack him. I
am a little bit, just because, I mean, it's constructive, though. But, I mean, to his credit, there was, like, injuries with the bench in and out of the season. Like, you know, Puff was injured for a bit. Jalen Washington was coming fresh off of not playing basketball for like a year. DeMarco Dunn, I think, got hurt at some point. That type of thing. Like, and I get that. That's hard to navigate. But I also, and I'm going to go back into picking on him a bit. I think one thing that Hubert probably suffered from this year is I did this last year and we got to the Final Four. And I can find a way to make this happen again. And I know that he tried to use the bench regardless, but I also feel like if you think that you did something right before and you mess with something and it doesn't work, your habit, and I think he actually said this, like your like reflex is to go back to what you were doing before. And that wasn't it. That wasn't it at all. I mean, yeah, I don't know how much the bench players would have helped with more minutes, but I also feel like you have a better chance of them helping eventually. Like, they weren't much of a help in March. So it's just like, it's just a lot of learning needing to be done.
And my thing is, if he needs to learn sort of like the optimal way of like in-game running,
mm-hmm.
that's okay. You can deal with that. What concerns me is all the stuff that comes around that.
Yeah.
Like, I think when it comes to, like, you know, calling plays and stuff, I think Hubert is fine.
Yeah.
But I can't help but have this, like, overwhelming sense that like the other stuff is not well, and nothing makes me change my mind about that when, again, you have people giving interviews where they seem like they're not happy. You have people like 5 minutes after they are able to running for the portal. It just concerns me that it's developing a bigger problem long term than we will be able to dig back out of. And like, I don't know, if I'm a guy on the bench this year, especially a freshman who, you know, didn't play under Roy, I can't blame that guy for being like, maybe I just don't want to be here.
And to that point, I'll say, you know, obviously we can't talk about it, but, and I really shouldn't even bring it up, but what I was told would be so atrocious, you know, for a transfer, if that were to occur, the talk around UNC, it has the potential to get a lot more messier. I mean, I hope it doesn't, but, that's just where we are now. And that just kind of speaks to my general concern, about what's going on. If these were normal year two issues, you know, then obviously I don't think you'd be quite dealing with this, but whatever they need to do, they need to get it figured out and quit.
Yeah, and I feel like that's why not going to the NIT was probably the best move they could have made, because all of this stuff, like, this just shouldn't be a thing. It's a lot. I do have a question for both of you. How many, because one thing that I feel like college basketball fans in general, it's taken a while to adapt to, is the transfer portal is a very real part of basketball now, and all teams are impacted in good or bad ways literally good and bad ways, actually, because you're going to lose players, you're going to gain players. How many transfers for UNC going out of the program is too many by the time this smoke clears?
I say five.
Five?
Just because of the... Not everything notwithstanding, just because of the general, everything has seemingly changed, you know. So even I still feel like you would be dealing with attrition even if you weren't dealing with this. You say, hey, I'm not playing, other guy was coming back, you know, and just for the general fact that you can go, as long as they're not in the CAA, please don't do that. but you can theoretically replace them, right? I would say five.
I feel like my gut instinct is if it's more than four, you have a bigger problem than just, the grass might be greener somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I would feel, I think I would feel like that number would probably be higher if it wasn't for the other stuff.
Right.
I feel like it's a lower threshold because the other stuff is so messy and loud. If it gets more than four, I think that there's a huge issue and it's going to be difficult to sort that out.
I'm going to name names in my answer because I feel like it's important, but basically I agree with both of you. So we've had two, Tyler Nickel and Justin McCoy. I have a feeling that Dontrez Styles is gone. If I had to guess, I mean, I know nothing, but based off of the podcast interview,
he certainly didn't sound like a man interested in another year in Chapel Hill.
And I don't blame him.
No.
Of all the people on the bench, like, he has the most reason to transfer. And I get it. I understand. Caleb Love, I feel like if he didn't catch so much hell, not only during the season, but especially at the end of the season. And if I didn't see him deleting his social media and stuff like that, I'd probably be a bit more optimistic. But something is going on there. It could fix itself. It could not. I don't know. But in my head, he's probably gone. So that's four. I would have to hope to God that nobody else leaves. Obviously, if Baycott leaves, it's not transfer. It's probably he's just moving on. I don't think I'm terribly concerned about RJ Davis. I can keep going on the roster, but ultimately, like, I think if I had to guess, there's four transfers. Any more than that, I'm with y'all. I'm worried.
Right. And I said five because coming into this, everything that was going on, I kind of expected Styles, Dunn, Love, and Puff to leave. That's what I thought. And so I give you the extra one. My extra one that I did not know is now Tyler, right? So we'll see. But yeah, I wanted to give the extra one because I thought it could also serve as a wake-up call to the coaching staff.
Right.
As if, you know, and you would say, well, they don't need one. They need something.
They shouldn't need one is a better way of putting that. But
no.
Yeah.
I definitely feel okay about Dunn, but you know what? I'm just going to throw this out there. If anybody transferred, any of them, I think the only one that would really surprise me is RJ. But if he transferred, it wouldn't be a big surprise. It'd be a little surprise. It wouldn't be big. That's where we're at now. I don't look at anybody right now based off of everything that's happened and just been like, you're absolutely 100% staying. And maybe some of that you can accredit to how college basketball is right now, but I think really it has to do with the chaos.
I mean, if you have like, and I'm not saying that anyone on this team has like legitimized NBA hopes, but if you do, you don't want the mess. You don't want the drama. You are, and that's what worries me with recruits, is like, they're watching this stuff.
Yeah.
Do you want to wade into that pool knowing what you know, knowing that it seems very not together on the inside?
And there's another reason why, and I know that they're not going to do the Lord's work all in a week or two. I realize they still could have played in it, because I think I had this conversation with some people in my article comments earlier. Like, I realized that there's still some stuff that could have happened anyway, whether they played or didn't play. But I also feel like Hubert Davis has a lot of explanation to do to even recruits. Commitments, especially that 2024 class, he has to call every single one of them and explain exactly what went wrong, how he's going to fix it, how confident he is that he's going to fix it before they sign that national letter of intent. Because if he doesn't explain it and he doesn't convince them that things aren't completely and utterly broken and that nothing can be fixed, they're going to leave.
So, quick note here, Clemson lost their NIT opener.
Wow. And see, this is exactly what we were trying to avoid.
Here's my question for both of you. What kind of timeline do you give Hubert if you're Bubba?
That is a tough question. Julius, you can go first.
Well, with as messy as it is, I think I told you both over the week, never would have thought it, never would have guessed it. But I think year three is a pivotal year for him.
Yeah. I think he cannot let things get worse. And that looks like worse looks different in various ways. Like,
yeah, I was about to say, please explain that.
Yeah, I will. I will. The record obviously can be worse by the end of the regular season, but I also think that if things are still chaotic behind the scenes, if you still have this situation where nobody really believes that these players are bought in, and if you are still just screwing up your message overall, I feel like you probably need to just be done. I have to say all that because I feel like they could make it to the NCAA tournament next year and it still could be a tragedy behind the scenes.
I'm still focused on the part where you said that the regular season record could be worse. I'm still.
I was like, why do you hate us?
Right? I'm just saying Roy Williams in 2020 had a team go sub 500.
Why do you want us to not continue this podcast?
I'm only throwing.
Yeah, but at this point, we're talking about trajectory too, right?
Yeah.
So it's not just a. I'm going to pick on State here. This is not an NC State program.
Right.
Right. This is one of the most successful programs in the history of the NCAA.
Yeah.
So you can't have a year. You can't have a year three that's even remotely close to this.
Yeah.
That's my thing. We're all old enough to remember 8-20.
Right.
And stop yelling at me on Twitter about it. Yes, I still remember.
That is a point that, like, I don't think you can say, like, well, it's not 8-20, because that was a whole mess in and of itself. But I will say there are parts of this season that eerily remind me of things that were happening during the 8-20 season.
Yeah.
The, like, players not seeming to be bought into whatever the coach is selling. Just the general like angst around the program. Like, I'm not saying that this season is akin to 8-20. I'm just saying that there are canaries in the coal mine of 8-20 that I feel like are a little visible in this, and it has to be put a stop to before you get to 8-20. And with the recruiting class that Carolina has for 2024 already sort of committed, I just don't think that they can afford to miss the tournament next year and have Hubert keep his job.
And I mean, and that's the thing, like, and I probably should be even more specific about the regular season record thing, because like they were one game away from making the tournament. Like, they beat Alabama, they're in. If they beat Duke, they're probably in. If they beat Virginia and Charlottesville, I would think that they're in. And like,
if they beat Alabama in that four overtime game, which they should have, they're in.
I don't know if you said Pitt, but like
Pitt,
either one of those games, they're probably in.
It was such like a, they just missed like that one more thing like 5 to 10 times, and you can't have the margin be that slim next year. So when I say like the record has to be better, it has to be like y'all are comfortably in the tournament. It can't be like beads of sweat rolling down your face, but we made it in. Like, that can't be a thing.
Which brings me to my next point, which is, while what you said is very valid and true, the non-charitable way to look at that is, up until February 2022, they were on the bubble of last year's tournament.
Yeah.
It looked like it was going to be down to the wire for that one. And I think when you zoom out past this season, there one or two good months in 2 years of work is not what is acceptable for a program of this magnitude. And I think last year bought, you know, it was impossible shoes to fill, all of that. If this had happened last year, I think it would have been a little bit of a different story. I think last year both bought Hubert some grace, but also did him a terrible disservice, because I think that last year's run hid a lot of what happened before that.
And it really placed them in a stratosphere they didn't belong in. And that's never fun to say as a fan. It's really not, because you want your team to be good. You want them to be one of the best. You want them to be the best. But I think the reality is they came into this season ranked number one. They weren't number one. They never were. The media ranked them number one, but that they were never number one. We saw that the very first game.
And that's fine and valid and true. However, to see, it was one heck of a decline that could have been stopped at multiple points in the season, and it never was, seemingly.
Right.
Yeah, like, at some point, part of your job is to stop the bleeding. And that goes back to Justin Jackson's interview where he was like, you know, we would have never let it get to a point where we were losing 5 games in a row, 6 games in a row, whatever it was. As a coach, it is your job to find a way to throw the tourniquet on it and be like, okay, I'm not going to let this thing bleed out. And I don't feel like we saw a lot of that this year. But what concerns me more than anything, and why I agree with Julius that year three, if it isn't, it should be sort of the, like, we have to see better year. Because, again, if you zoom out of just this year and you take in all of last year into consideration, the tournament looks like a giant outlier more than, you know, any repeatable occurrence.
It's frustrating when a coach is a good coach, but they're not a good coach. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the X's and O's are there. The scheme is there. The passion to coach is there. But it's the part where you can't get your team to buy in. The reason they went to the Final Four last year is because they bought in for a month. That's what happened. I don't know why they didn't buy in this year, but they bought in and we saw fantastic results. It's really frustrating that he wasn't able to get them to do it. And I know that it's on the players to buy in too, but also it's just like, these guys aren't, I don't even know how to put it, but it's just like, you have to be able to get through at least enough to not end up in the situation that we're in.
You have to meet them halfway so that, like, you know, in an ideal world, players would, you know, run through a wall for their coach.
Yeah.
But you have to do the back end work that makes them want to run through the wall
yes.
for you. And when players are feeling slighted,
yeah,
they're probably not going to want to run through a wall for you. They're probably going to be like looking for their next escape hatch.
Right.
So here's a question for you. Did the coaching staff buy into any of this pushback that we're getting now, that you literally can't criticize a player because you're affecting their mental health struggles? Is that a possibility that affected the coaching or perceived lack thereof of this team? Because it's not just UNC Twitter. Like, Carolina Blitz even sent a tweet, you know, talking about I covered him, that he's a good guy. I was like, okay, that's cool. Nobody said he wasn't, but, you know, there was obviously something wrong, inexplainable there. So I'm just curious. Do you think that factored into any of this?
So I just want to make sure I'm understanding what you're asking. You're asking if the coaching staff seriously believes that these kids are just not available to criticize.
Or basically that, like, it has come from the top that they cannot.
Yes.
I don't know.
I would not be surprised, because I feel like if you have that kind of mentality to the degree that it seems like Hubert does, I can see you being like, shh, 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 we're not doing that. We're not going to rip into this guy. And in Hubert's radio show the other night, he was talking about, you know, players today and the social media stuff that they deal with. And he was saying that when he was a player, he didn't even know what he was shooting because he just, like, wouldn't look up any of that stuff. And there's part of me that's like, did you tell the players to do that? Because that's not exactly how I would recommend running things.
Right.
Maybe a couple of them needed to know what they were shooting.
I will say that I know that we've just spent most of this thus far talking about Hubert and the coaching staff. But obviously this is not, or at least in my opinion, this is not just on him, right? Everyone involved shares blame in what happened. My only frustration is that again, much like we couldn't stop the bleeding at some point this season from our skid down, no one in this chain decided to attempt to better themselves or correct something that was happening, from a player, you know, up to the coaching staff. Like, it's just, I'm failing to explain, like, what a catastrophe this was and how avoidable it was, but wasn't. Like,
and I think in some ways Bubba's aware of that. I'm not saying that's why he didn't fire Hubert Davis yesterday or anything like that. That's not what I'm implying. I'm just saying, like, I get the sense that he is fully aware that, like, it is a very multifaceted issue. I mean, we've said a couple times on this podcast, this is basically the core that sent Roy into retirement. And I hate saying that too much because it sounds like a cop-out for, like, Hubert Davis's, like, faults. Like, I'm not excusing that either, but what I am saying is, like, there's just something that there's been something about this roster that hasn't been right for basically the entire time it's existed. I would even argue a little before that, because I mean, like, the roster with Garrison Brooks, Baycott, Cole Anthony, Play Tech, like, that whole, that obviously wasn't great either. But yeah, it's just chaos. It's sheer chaos. And I don't know if there's one or two pieces that if they took their ball and went somewhere else, if that would fix anything. I don't feel like it's that easy. I think there was a point in time where I thought maybe, but I don't feel that way anymore at all. I think everybody just has a lot of soul searching to do.
I will say, I still go back to, I can't remember if it was the, I guess it couldn't have been the Wake Forest game, but there was a game where Bubba and Kirshner were in the locker room for like 45 minutes post game. And I still go back to that in my head a lot. And I think we even speculated on this podcast at the time that if you trust the coaching staff to address what was going on with the team at the time in a way that you think they should, I don't know that the athletic director and the sports information director show up to that conversation. And ever since then, I can only, and again, I could be wrong, I wasn't there, but there's something about that situation that makes me think they felt like they had to step in and say something to the team that wasn't being said by the coaching staff. And looking back, that if that's what happened, and like I said, I don't think that would have happened under Roy. I don't think that we would have ever had a situation where they felt like they needed to be in on one of those conversations.
No.
I just feel like that might have been our first real indication that everything was not going well.
I'm going to throw a little extra mess on top of this, because I was listening to Bubba Cunningham talk on the Carolina Insider podcast. He said something that either I just never knew it, and it's just the thing that an AD does, or it's not a thing that AD does, and it only happens when you're in situations like this. But what he was saying was that when he was talking to Hubert Davis after all of this happened, he was saying that there was conversations that were going to happen basically about what can be done better from, like, you know, this perspective, that perspective, the other. But the thing that set off alarm bells in my head, whether fair or not, was he was asking about the roster, who he, you know, basically trying to get a grasp on, I guess, who might potentially be leaving. But not only that, but who he's recruiting. And I was just like, that sounds weird. And once again, it could be an AD thing. I don't know, but it seems a little weird to me. If it's not, but it seems a little weird to me that you are so involved with basketball recruiting to the point where you're wanting information, detailed information, sounds like, about potential recruits. It kind of sounds like you are wanting to know if these people are going to buy in, are going to be a good fit to the point where we're not going through this again. That's what it sounded like to me. And maybe it's because I'm in a bad headspace since all of this happened, but it sounded weird.
No, I don't think you're in a bad headspace. Not on this one anyway. Like, because we know athletic directors are essentially, you know, CEOs or general managers. To reach down that low, that deep, and start, you know, talking to say that. And Bubba's a cunning man, right? He doesn't mention stuff just to mention it. You know, he knows what he's saying. And so for him to even mention that is a giant red flag for me.
It kind of just speaks to, I don't know how much, like, unconditional trust there is within that sort of inner circle of the program. And, you know, that goes back to what I was saying with the team meeting. Like, it just feels like we aren't necessarily trusting that the right stuff is going on. And that's concerning. And I get that it's, you know, a new head coach who had never had a head coaching job before. You're coming fresh off a Hall of Famer who you never had to, you know, handhold through sort of the sludge and all of that. But it just feels like very thin ice all around is the vibe that I get.
And I think it's something that was highlighted, but has not been like a mainstay, you know, in the talks around this team. Like, that's a very big deal.
Yeah.
Both the talk, you know, the talk itself that it happened. But yeah, I somehow missed that. But I mean, I'm definitely not surprised. But, and I would say, I guess the only other thing that I could say, I'm definitely not trying to take shots at anyone. But it may sound otherwise. I'm glad at least one person associated with this men's basketball team is like, hey, this is unacceptable. This is embarrassing. We got to do something about it.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the one thing that I feel like we can actually breathe about is I don't feel like Bubba is going to, I think I said it earlier in this podcast, he's not going to let Carolina basketball get buried under the Dean Smith Center, never to like resurrect itself. It's not going to be that. The question is, how long are we going to have to suffer for?
I mean, that's my thing is like, sure, if you believe that he's not going to let that happen, that's fine. I don't necessarily disagree with that. But I feel like the program already has to do damage control.
Yeah.
Already. And that's before you add on whatever happens the rest of this, you know, period of transfers, next season, if you have any commits that decommit, like.
I would be shocked if we didn't have at least one that
decommitted. Yeah, same. So that's now. Like, I feel like the program has to do damage control now. You already mentioned it where you're like, Hubert probably has to reach out to all of those commits and be like, so this is what happened.
Uh-huh.
We're going to fix it. It's not going to be a problem. But you know their parents are nervous their coaches are nervous. Other coaches at other schools are getting itchy fingers to make some calls. And basketball is so different now. Like,
yeah.
Another coach can call up a kid and be like, so everything around Carolina looks kind of sketch right now.
Yeah.
Plus the possibility of an NIL deal as well. Right. So who's to stop Miami from going, oh, hey, things are kosher over at US, and sorry, Miami, but
Miami, where they're,
won't give this.
I was going to say where their NIL stuff is super sketchy. Super,
I was going to say Isaiah Wong threw you guys under the bus, so sorry. But but yeah, so what's to stop in Miami from reaching out and saying, oh, hey, we know things aren't going very well. Look at the season that we just had. Oh, by the way, I can get you $1 million to come down to South Florida. Well, we don't have personal income taxes. I know you don't know anything about that, but you will. you know, kind of, so
it doesn't have to be not sketchy. The checks just have to clear.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah, I meant sketchy as in you will probably get paid a very large amount of money as long as you don't ask questions about where it's coming from.
If you're,
and actually, you don't even have to touch the cash. The cash even might be dirty, but you don't have to touch it. It's just, exactly. It's a direct deposit.
But yeah, like all of that is a new element of this. And I feel like it's one thing to, I mean, I'm going to go back to this analogy, but like it's one thing to stop the bleeding, but at some point, the factors that you have to put into it to get it back become more and more and more severe. There's a difference between losing 25% of the blood in your body and losing 50% of the blood in your body as far as the damage sustained. And I just worry that if it's not taken care of soon, that you can fix it, you can get it back, but how long does it take to get it back? How much bad do you have to go through to get it back?
Right.
And it's interesting because that brings up another point too, about the possibility of a wasted natural NIL deal, right? A UNC basketball offer in and of itself is a walking NIL deal. No? So like, if you're blowing up all that capital to then, you know, where we are now with the damage control and now with the possibility that you may have to actually start coming with some money out of the collective or what Heels collective, you know, start to either keep players or get them, it's kind of interesting. But I heard rumors about how much it took for us to get 3 football transfers last season. And I was like, that's not sustainable for UNC. No, not for football anyway. Basketball is different, but for football, I was like, are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah. We live in a crazy time with all that stuff. And I feel like part of why Huber was hired to begin with is he seemed like he'd be somebody able to navigate all that. But that doesn't really matter if everything else is bad, right? So
honestly, I think one of the biggest things other than like, you know, him essentially being handpicked by Roy, one of the things, major things that had going for him was the fact that he could keep everything together with the animosity that was going about at the time.
Yeah, that's been a really I think it was maybe Jones and Adam that said that they felt like the team got along fine. They weren't exactly like best friends necessarily, but they're like, we've seen worse locker rooms. But I still feel like it's when you still get the feeling that all of that is going on all throughout the season. It doesn't really matter what fact is or not, but the fact that the air around the team felt like everything was disjointed, like that's just bad. Like there's no way to get around how bad that is.
Well, I feel like this has been a good therapeutic session. I'm sure there will be more therapeutic sessions to come as we find out who else is transferring, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, we will be back with more, more complaints, maybe, hopefully some optimism along the way, who can say. But do you want to tell the people where they can find you in the meantime?
You can find me at THB Brandon.
I feel like telling people where they can find me is just going to invite more criticism. So you can find me at UNC_Tar Heel Fan.
And I am at Tanya_Anderson. Until next time, go Heels.
Go Heels.
Go Heels.